to the next lesson. So let me get my screen share up. Okay, I think you're seeing my web browsers with the basic physics objects lesson. And let me get all of your faces back on my other screen so I can see hands that are raised and things like that. Okay, super. So you had a couple of pre-exercises, related to physics objects. You went through some background information that we had on the CMS website, the cms.cern site, about electrons, photons. I think we had links there for some muons and for jets. And we talked a little bit about the particle flow process, which is how CMS takes detector information and reconstructs things that we recognize as particles. And so we're going to follow off of that. And we are going to take an actual dive into the software platform that we have put together as our example framework. So this is what is going to follow us through the rest of the workshop for actually working with these AOD files and processing them so that you, the user, could do some analysis on particles that you're familiar with. So we're going to blitz a little bit. Here's our schedule. We're going to get down to the break in the next 45 minutes. So we're going to start by looking at this tool, which I have up here in the GitHub webpage that you can see. And then we're going to kind of step through those physics objects again that you learned about and talk about some of their specific software features. And then after the break, when we do hands-on, we'll run some things, we'll investigate histograms, and so we'll actually do some hands-on exercises. Okay, so let's get started. We're going to talk about first the physics object extractor tool, which is a tool so that you can extract physics objects and their information from the CMS root files into a format that's a little bit more human understandable. And so as you learned in the pre-exercise, when we say physics object, we're speaking very broadly, and we mean almost anything that would represent a particle in the CMS detector. Muons, electrons, taus, photons, jets, missing transverse momentum, which is on the bucket that we unfortunately have to stick all of our neutrinos or dark matter particles or supersymmetric partner, lightest supersymmetric partners, or all of those good things in that bucket. So what we've already learned is how to find the information about some of these different objects in the data file. So this first panel here on the lesson page, you've already seen, we just talked about this with Matt, the output of an EDM dump event content. And so, you know, if in doubt, the first thing I would do would be to look and see, you know, can I, if I'm interested in muons, can I find something in here that's just called muons? And maybe it's C++ class type, looks like it might be a muon. That's going to be a promising place for me to begin for this physics object. And the tool here will teach you which ones are kind of the basics, the defaults that you should go for. So we've learned how to list out objects in the file, and all of the physics objects that you would want to extract using the tool can be found in these AOD files. So let's jump to the actual POET tool. We have a happy accident in the acronym here, so I'll refer to this tool as POET. And here is the link, which brings you to the GitHub page that you can see on the screen here. So if you have, this is the setup material for this part of the lesson is basically to go into your container. So if you still have your virtual machine or your container open, I'm going to start mine. You can go into yours or start it. And we land in the CMSSW5 area where we need to be. So what I'm going to do is clone the physics object extractor tool. Whoa, not like that. I'm going to hit copy first, and then I will paste it in. So we can clone the physics object extractor tool and go into this folder that it's produced. And now you guys have access to all of the code that we're going to use today. And I'll show you things on GitHub, which is a little bit easier to read. But I'll go ahead and set this to compile while we talk about the features of this software. Okay. So one of the other important things you learned about in the pre-exercises that this is building on is the idea of an ED analyzer. So the physics object extractor tool is set up using a series of ED analyzers, and they all live here in the source folder. So we've got 10-ish, 15-ish of them, all different ED analyzers. And you can see that they correspond to different physics objects, electrons, jets, muons, photons, taus, et cetera. So I always like to start thinking about my ED analyzers from the inside out. Maybe I like to look at the source code first. So we're gonna look at muon analyzer kind of as our example. And here in the lesson page, I've pulled out some specific lines that are just a refresh on the ED analyzer system of accessing a certain type of object. So if I'm interested in analyzing muons, I need to access from the CMS software stack all of the information about the muon class that exists by including these C++ header files. And then you learned about the analyze function. So I'm going to skip over the constructors and look straight at the analyze function, which is the function that's called on every event in this CMSSW file. And so for every event, this is basically a duplicate of what you had in your demo analyzer in the pre-exercise, where we are opening, we're opening a collection. And in this case, we're going to call it my muons. And we're going to use our configuration file for this ED analyzer. We're going to use this configuration idea so that we can tell a different file the specific name of the muon collection we would like to open. But this line right here will get the muons for us out of the event. And the last thing I'll highlight for you, again, this is a refresh from the CMSSW pre-exercise. If that worked and we actually got some muons from that get by label command, we can loop over them and we can do whatever we want to do using all of the member functions that exist for a muon in CMSSW. So that's the super broad overview refresh of how to work with one of these ED analyzers. And this structure repeats itself in all of the other analyzers that you saw in the folder there. So, what's the first thing that we actually do with these muons? The first thing that we actually do is store their four vector information. This is you know, especially if you're coming from, let's say, a theory background, these are member functions that will probably be immediately recognizable to you and comforting to you. This is information that you're used to pulling out. So we can access energy, momentum in the plane that's transverse to the colliding beams, X direction, Y direction, Z direction, if that's your preference for a coordinate system. Angles, two angles, pseudorapidity and the azimuthal angle. And we can actually even ask for charge and mass of these objects. And the reason I wanted to point this out first is because these are completely common. The format of these member functions here, like the spelling, the capitalization, is not special to muons. This is something you can do for electrons, for jets, for taus, for any CMS reconstructed object. So those are common features for all of our physics objects. Okay. The last thing I want to look at before we take a tiny pause for questions is how we configure the physics object extractor. So I'm going to come back to the Python folder, and I'm going to look at the only file inside the Python folder, which is our POET configuration file. And you saw examples of this in your pre-exercise about how to configure one of these configuration files. We have a couple of command line arguments, actually, which are described here in the comments. And here is where we're going to define the name of the R process. So we were talking about this in the last lesson, the process called Sim, the process called Rico. We're going to have a process here called POET. And so that's what we're going to call everything we're about to do. And after we set up some things for input files, and sort of the standard CMS tools that we need to run, like global tags that you've learned about, then we start to actually configure all of the physics object extractor modules. And what we care about right now are the muons. So here we go, process.mymuons. We can tell it which ED analyzer we're going to run. And the only piece of information we need to configure for this ED analyzer is which input tag to grab out of the file, which is based on our EDM dump event content from up here, muons. And there we go. Now, just in case, I added a note here, just in case you're opening something that has, where there's multiple identical names, you can actually get more specific here. You could say muons colon some specific label colon some specific process if you needed to be more specific in the name of the collection that you open. So at this point, let's see, my POET was able to compile. If yours happens to be in a similar state, you could try to execute this line just to see as we go through the next couple of pages, see if we run successfully. So in order to run our physics object extractor tool, we need to call CMS run python poet config.py. And if we choose to, we can give the two command line arguments. So I'm going to choose to run on simulation, which is the default. And I'm going to choose to use this setting for the physics analysis toolkit, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. So you can choose whatever. Oh, no.
Julie, I think the Python directory is in PhysObject Extractor.
You know what? So that I need to go in either point more specifically or go inside this folder. So I have the joy of, let me click down so that my, and I'll use tab complete so that I know it knows where I am. There we go. Okay. So if you see anything remotely like this, that's a great sign. And if not, obviously you can post in the Mattermost channel or we can try to help you out. So let's briefly pause. Does anyone have questions that have not already been answered. I will try to find the chat in my screen here. Okay. Awesome. Okay, I don't see any hands raised immediately. So let's carry on while that runs. Electrons and photons are the next block that I want to look at. So for electrons and photons, and again, this is going to be a little bit of a blitz of information, which we'll come back to in the hands-on exercise. For electrons and photons, we have two important ED analyzers. We have an electron analyzer, and we have a photon analyzer. And they're set up very similarly. So I'm going to open the electron analyzer to begin with. And I'm going to scroll down past the declarations and the constructors to the analyze function, because that's where we'll do our interesting work. Okay. So here's proof of what I just said being true. The four vector information for electrons happens right here. So as we're looping over electrons, we happen to put this near the bottom of the analyze loop rather than at the top. But we have all of the same four vector access functions that we saw for muons, energy, transverse momentum, XYZ, eta and phi, angles, charge and charge. We've decided we're not interested in storing the mass here for electrons, but you certainly could. So all of those are the same. And then we have a lot of branches that you can see that we're saving that are custom to electrons. And one of them that I want to point out has to do with the electron track. So this is something that we have access to for our charged particles. We have access to the track in the innermost layers of the CMS detector that actually pointed to the electromagnetic shower that we've identified as being from an electron. And so we can ask this electron for its associated Gaussian sum filter track, where Gaussian sum filter is the name of the algorithm that was used to build the track. This is on the lesson page if it's easier for you to keep track of, because sometimes we have other code lines in between the important things. So if you prefer to look at the code snippets on the lesson page, they've been slimmed down a little bit compared to the actual .cc file that you see in your area or here on GitHub. So we can ask an electron for its track, and then we can ask that track for some information. And one most important piece of information we can ask from the track is how closely it interacted with this primary vertex. So the actual proton-proton collision vertex that we've identified as the hard physics process in this event, we can ask the track, how far away is your distance of closest approach in the transverse plane, the XY plane. And we can ask the same question along the beam line. So we can ask in the circle around the beam line or along the beam line, how far away was the impact parameter of this track? And both of those things have uncertainties. So these quantities are very important for asking questions like, is this electron associated with this collision vertex? Was it produced immediately, if effectively in the collision, maybe from the decay of a very, very short-lived particle? Or did it come from some other source? The other sections that we have here, so that takes care of these variables that we've looked at, and also these here at the bottom. So what's left in the middle What's left in the middle here is stuff that's related to the electron itself and how it interacted with the CMS detector. So we have one branch that we're saving for isolation, which we'll talk about what that means. And then we have some quality levels, loose, medium, and tight quality levels for electron identification. So the idea here is that whenever we observe something in CMS that we're declaring, this is an electron, that's a statement that's subject to doubt. And we try to do our best to make that doubt small. But we can always apply different criteria to get more and more and more and more sure that this is actually an electron as opposed to, let's say, a photon or some sort of detector noise. And we typically name those sets of criteria that get us more and more and more sure of what we're looking at with names like loose to tight. So loose is very... is a set of criteria that's quite accepting. So we're pretty sure that all the real electrons will end up in this list of things that are loose. But we may also grab some non-electrons in loose. In contrast to that, sets of criteria that we call tight, we've chosen to be more picky. So that we're much more confident that anything we've labeled tight is really an electron. And this might come at the risk of missing some of them. There may be some genuine electrons that we do not consider in further in the analysis because they didn't happen to pass these criteria. So it's a trade-off, and we'll store the information for multiple, what these are called, are working points, multiple points at which we could work with our electrons. And so that's what all this messy stuff is up here. All of this that you're seeing on the GitHub page is to calculate those flags, those true false labels. So I'm going to come back over here to the lesson page. And the text here describes what I just tried to say in words about the idea of a loose, a tight identification for objects. And the links here that you see take you to the public web pages where you can find the actual information that we use to write these lines of code that are in GitHub. So in the interest of time, I'm not going to try to read through any of this. You can come back and look at this on your own later. But you can see that what we're working with here is a set of flags. So we have a set of true-false flags. And then if some huge set of criteria are all true, we would call this electron loose. Further, if another set of criteria are true, we'd call it medium. And further, if another set of criteria are true, we'd call it tight. So we're successively applying more and more restrictive criteria to decide whether this electron is loose or medium or tight. And each one of these if questions is looking at some quantity that relates to how the electron has interacted with the CMS detector, and particularly with the electromagnetic calorimeter. So I've laid out a little description of what each one of these criteria are that you can look through so that you can kind of understand what features of the detector we're using to make decisions. The very last one in the list, isolation, we'll talk about a tiny bit more. Isolation is important for all our particles, not just for electrons. We use it for most particle physics objects in CMS. And so isolation is basically, it's easy to understand conceptually. The idea is if I have an electron, let's say the electron has been directed straight up on my screen, how much energy from other particles is in a cone around my electron? Is it a large fraction of the electron's energy? Is it a small fraction of the electron's energy? And this, the numbers that we get for that question point us to different physics answers for how this electron was produced. An electron that's basically on its own in space was probably produced in the decay of some, you know, interesting particle, maybe a top quark, maybe a Z boson, maybe a Higgs boson. An electron that is buried in a cloud of a whole bunch of other particles is probably not from such a decay. It's probably something that's been produced, by hadrons. Hadrons having weak force decays as they move through the material of the detector. And so what we'll see a couple of times are functions like this. For isolation, we'll be looking at charged hadrons, which was one of our particle flow labels, if you recall the pre-exercise. We'll be looking at neutral hadrons and photons. And we'll be subtracting off a contribution from all of the neutral background energy that we expect to live in the detector without being caused by this proton collision. And that's where that rho variable comes in that we mentioned before. So all of this code here is in the effort to calculate these few variables that we store here for each electron. Okay. Photons are very similar. We haven't looked at the photon analyzer, but as electromagnetic calorimeter objects, you can imagine they're quite similar to electrons in all of their functions. So I'm going to hop to the next page, which is a little more information for muons and for tau leptons. Most important, perhaps, on this lesson page are those links. So just like we had for electrons and photons, these are the links to the CMS reference pages that are publicly accessible, that have a lot of the detailed software information you might need. And so we talked about muons in terms of their four vectors already. Let's look at what else is there. Muons are also charged particles. So we can also access a track that's associated to these muons. And so we can ask the muon for its associated track. It looks a little bit different than the electron track member function, but it provides us with the same type of object, with a track object. And so if that track was found, we can ask for the impact parameter and its uncertainties, just as we did for an electron. Now, what's really nice about muons, you'll notice this is a much shorter code snippet than we just saw in the electron analyzer. There's not anywhere near as much stuff here. And that's because the muon group in CMS has already put together their list of detector criteria, and they have wrapped it up into one member function where we can simply ask, is tight muon? Is soft muon? There are a variety of different identification working points, loose, medium, tight, just like we saw for electrons, but all we have to do is ask for the flag from the muon object itself. With the caveat that we have to actually tell it which vertex we're interested in as the primary vertex for this event, because some of the muon identification criteria in terms of the detector information, they're interested in the muon's relationship to that vertex. So here's two examples of accessing identification information from the muon, and they're much simpler and more compact, but we'll dig into them a little bit more in the hands-on exercises. And so lastly, for muons, we can calculate that isolation. And so here's a set of functions that look almost identical to what we saw before. Some charged hadron energy, some neutral hadron energy and some photon energy, all of this in a cone around the muon. And we're basically asking the question, how much energy is there nearby our muon to decide whether it's living by itself, it's isolated in the detector, or it's very near to a lot of other energy deposits in the detector. Okay, real quickly, I'm going to show you the tau analyzer. So mostly so that you start to see the common features. Again, I'm going to scroll down to the analyze function. And this one is even shorter because taus do the exact same thing. The tau group in CMS has coded up all of their criteria for identifying taus from different sources and taus of different quality levels into flags that we can just access. So here's all the four vector information. As promised, it's exactly the same as before. And here is a whole list of identification algorithms. This looks a little bit different because basically these guys live in another collection. So we're using this operator notation and we're using an index for how far into the list of taus we are. And every time we do that, we're accessing one of these input tags. We've seen the input tags before in our ED analyzer configuration files. We've seen the input tags in for muons and for other things. Here, we're actually opening some directly without making them configurable. And we'll look in the hands-on exercises at what some of these labels mean. Okay, how close am I to running out of time? I think we have about 7 more minutes in this session. So we're gonna look quickly. We're gonna pass by, unfortunately, we're gonna pass by this information about generator level particles. I encourage you to look back over that as you have time in any of the homeworks. And we're gonna take a peek.
You have 10 more minutes or 10. I think 12 minutes. I think it ends at 35.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So let's take a look at our last big chunk of objects, which is jets and missing transverse energy. So we've talked about the leptons in a very broad, in a quick way. We've talked about electrons and muons and taus. We've talked conceptually about photons. They're very similar to electrons in all of the software features. And so now what we need to do is move over to the hadron side. And so let's talk a little bit about jets. Jets is high energy physics experiment language for a quark was here. Or a hadron, something made out of quarks. And what they look like in the detector are large showers of particles. So we have spatially grouped collections of long-lived particles. By long-lived, I mean they can traverse the CMS detector before they decay if they are not stable. And they tend to be produced in the hadronization process of either a quark or a gluon. And we can look at this group, this collection of particles, to infer the energy and momentum properties of the initial particle that produced it. And we have a makeup, you know, there's because of the hadronization process, there's going to be a different particles of different types. We have a charged hadrons in large percentage, but there will always be some photons. We produce a lot of neutral pions and they decay quickly to photons. So there are always a bunch of photons in jets and perhaps other neutral hadrons as well. We almost never in CMS analyze these particles one by one, because there's hundreds of them. So we have no real good way to reconstruct all the way back to that initial quark or gluon. We have to use this conglomerate object to do our analysis of how that quark or gluon behaved as it left the collision. And so we have to make choices when we've got a messy system with many particles. We have to make choices about how which ones we're going to group together and how we're going to define the conglomerate object. And this is done in a clustering process. This clustering process is not specific to CMS. So we do use the FastJet package. We use the anti-KT algorithm. If that name means something to you, then you know exactly what we're talking about. So we use these algorithms that are known in the community to do our jet clustering. What's unique to CMS a little more is that we cluster from particle flow candidates. And when we have clustered particle flow candidates, we call the resulting jets PF jets, which is a label you'll see in our software. And so the clustering process, the short form is that you start with all the initial particles and you combine particles that are very close together in an iterative sequence subject to these two functions. So we calculate this quantity D, which depends on the momentum and the separation of the particles. And then we have a condition for the magnitude of D that tells us when to keep going or when to stop our clustering. And so eventually, if we take all the particles in the detector and we go through this iterative sequence, we would end up with a set of jet objects in the detector. Okay, I see a hand up from Dylan. I don't know if, do I have to unmute Dylan? Probably not.
Everybody should be able to unmute themselves.
I was just slow for a second. Yeah, I'm just curious if when you offer people jets, do they also have access to the constituent list? Or do they just have the jet object?
I will double check. I believe we can access the constituents. I don't think we've given you an example of doing that here in the extractor tool, but we can double check. I think it's fine. Okay. So here's the picture of what that might look like in the end. Anti-KT jets have this nice feature of being sort of mostly circular-ish, so they're easy to kind of conceptualize in our heads. One of the things we have to think about when we're identifying jets or we're working with jets is we have to think about all the energy that will end up in this region of space, so one of these colored circles. There can be energy here that is caused by other proton collisions that have no association with the proton collision we're interested in analyzing. And if that energy is from neutral particles, we have no way of using the tracks to help us get rid of it. And so we've mentioned briefly the idea of subtracting off kind of an energy background, and that's something we do very commonly for all jets. Okay, access, that's what you all care about. There are two ways to do this. There are two jet analyzers in POET. One is called Jet Analyzer, and one is called PAT Jet Analyzer. I'm gonna focus on the PAT Jet Analyzer because this method of working with jets has a lot of benefits to it for the user. You're totally free to check out both of them and use whatever fits your needs best. I think this one is a little bit more user-friendly in most cases. So for a PAT jet and for a regular RICO type jet, we have all of these same, excuse me, there's a lot of helper functions in this code. We have somewhere eventually all of the same type of four vector access options. theta phi charge, transverse momentum, energy, px, py, pz, all of those things, same here as they were everywhere else. What's cool about the physics analysis toolkit, JETS, that's what PAT stands for, physics analysis toolkit. And we'll talk about this more actually tomorrow. We're going to get more into this concept of corrections. They have all the corrections applied for you when they're created. And as this says here, we're going to discuss that more in the upcoming lesson. But you can see how these labels here for things like energy, mass, px, py, pz, they're called corrected. And that's what the user typically wants, is whatever is the most correct version. Okay. Identification is the other thing we're talking about in this lesson. So identification for JETS is very similar to electrons and muons and such in concept. There are detector-related criteria that determine whether or not this looks like an actual JET from a hadron, or whether this looks like a JET coming from some type of noise. That's what we're really interested in here, is identifying the difference between physics object from some quark or some gluon. We don't care which at this point. We just care that it was an actual particle as opposed to being noise or something that is not really a particle. And we're gonna dig into that in the hands-on exercise. We can use the reference information. We can use the reference information to learn about the detector criteria, and we can apply that detector criteria to calculate an ID. We haven't already done it for you here because it's going to be part of the exercise. Okay. And the very last guy, which we're not going to go over, I won't even click into the analyzer. There are some examples here. We won't be using it as heavily in this workshop. Missing transverse momentum, or sometimes missing transverse energy, unfortunately, is the more common acronym we use. We usually call this MET, which stands directly for missing transverse energy, although it's really missing transverse momentum. And so this is the negative vector sum of everything that happened in the event, and it represents any particle that was not detected at all in our detector, which completely escaped. And so we have several ways of calculating this and correcting this according so that it represents properly all the objects observed in CMS for an event. Okay, we've almost made it. The very last page here, we're almost at our time, but this you looked at in a pre-exercise. So the trigger information that you really need was in the pre-exercise. This page here gives you just the software mapping. How do we take what you learned in the pre-exercise and actually apply it literally in the POET tool? That information is here for you in this page. There are two things that you can pull out about triggers. You learned about all these paths, HLT underscore other stuff underscore other stuff. So we have a way for you to provide some trigger patterns that you want the pass-fail information from, and you want the prescale information from, which you learned about in the pre-exercise. And we also have a way that you can actually pull out information about specific objects that passed a certain trigger's decision-making. So for instance, if I ask for the HLT mu 12 trigger, I could figure out which muon had been the mu 12, which made this event interesting to the trigger. So we have those two features available for you here in the POET tool. Okay, I'm going to stop talking. This was way more lecture style. So we're going to take our 15-minute break. And then we're going to come back and look at several hands-on exercises where you guys can choose what you want to dig into and try this stuff out. But I'm happy to answer any questions while we begin the break here for everyone else.
There is actually one question about the equal timing.
I don't know the answer to that question off the top of my head. I would have to look that up for you.
I have the feeling that we yes, exactly. Because at some point we were trying to reproduce some long-lived particle analysis, and I believe we were trying to search for that information, and I think we found it, but I have to double check.
Yeah, even in CMS now, the folks who are working on long-lived particle analyses, I think do the most work of all of us, because all of our default reconstruction methods kind of assume prompt production. So for long-lived information, you tend to go back and dig a little deeper. Okay, we reconvene it. For me, 10:50, 17:50 for hands-on.
I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording for the break, and then we'll start it up again for the hands-on session.